Call to order the Veterans Affairs Division.
Veterans Affairs Division, please come to order. And Rep. Purcell, would you lead us in the pledge and flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, welcome, everyone, the Veterans Affairs Division. And first of all, approve the March 14th, 2016 minutes. We have an approval there. Representative Lesh approves the March 14th, 2016 minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Pass. We have several bills on the order today, and the first bill up is House File 2946. Representative Keel. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
Please introduce yourself.
I am Representative Keel from up in District 1B. I have a House File 2946. I'm having trouble with those numbers today. Mr. Chair, would you like me to introduce the bill?
Please introduce your bill. And the bill... I would like to move House File 2946 and recommend that it be referred to Mining on Outdoor. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, last fall I got an email from a mother that has sons that sons and son-in-laws that serve in the Minnesota National Guard. She found herself very frustrated that they do not reside in Minnesota, so they had to pay the license fee for an out-of-state hunter, and asked me if I thought it was fair that they served in the Minnesota National Guard but resided in North Dakota and had to pay for that larger license. After doing some investigation, sometimes we do some adjustments for those who serve in Minnesota but don't necessarily reside. And so with that, I brought this bill forward that would allow a non-resident but is an active state National Guard member to obtain a Minnesota hunting and fishing license. And that basically, Mr. Chair, is the basis for the bill. And I would ask for your consideration.
Are there any questions from the committee? Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Keel. Do we have any idea of what the numbers are of how many people this would affect?
No, we don't. There is a fiscal note requested on this so that we have some idea. I'm guessing it's not huge, but then we would want to know how much it would affect us.
Representative Hancock? Okay. Are there any other questions? Anyone from the audience that would like to comment on this bill? With that, then I will recommend that House File 2946 be referred to Mining and Outdoor Recreation. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Thank you. Next bill is House File 2961. Mr. Ogham.
Good
Welcome to the committee.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It's a pleasure to be here.
And I will get your bill before the committee. I'll refer it to recommend the...
I don't know if you accept oral amendments, but I do have one slight change I'd like to make to put the bill in the form that I...
Okay, why don't you address that amendment?
Okay, that would be on line 1.9 on the first page, and the where it says 2A, I'd like to insert active member of any branch, so on and so forth.
So if I see that right, line 1.9 to N, A-N, active member of any branch or unit?
Correct.
Are there any questions regarding that amendment? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? We now have your bill in the order that you would like to have it, and I would like to refer to... House File 2961 to Mining and an Outdoor Recreation. So go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill is a result of some of the hearings that this committee held around the state, and particularly in my district in Coon Rapids at the BFW. This bill provides for an annual permit that's issued without fee to an active member of any branch, unit, or reserve component of the United States Armed Forces, including the National Guard, and also the members' dependents. It's my view that this is the least we can do for some of our veterans that are serving are in the Armed Forces, so they can enjoy the national parks. Lord knows that they make enough sacrifices, and it's a small amount of money. And I just consulted with the DNR, and I think that oral amendment probably helps them a great deal. So it's a simple bill, and that's just the bill, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions from the committee? Is there anyone in the audience who would like to address this bill? Please come forward.
Mr. Chairman, members, through the record.
Welcome. Please introduce yourself.
Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Natural Resources. And thank you, Representative Uglum, for amending your bill for us. This bill, and actually the one next on your agenda, too, 1734, with Representative Purcell, is an issue we've been working with interested parties on for some time, trying to streamline the process that we use to allow active military personnel entrances into the park, actually moving into giving them an annual sticker in this fashion, or allowing them to use the federal card will reduce staff impacts, so it streamlines our processes, better government, and we'll work with both Representative Uglum and Purcell and yourself, Mr. Chair, to make sure we get the bill in the form that everybody can support and endorse. Okay. The fiscal impacts with you are minimal. So,
okay. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that up. And I know a lot of our members do take part in going to our different state parks, and it's a great way for our veterans to get back and relax too in our state parks. So, thank you.
We agree, Mr. Chair. We want to do everything we can for them. So, thank you.
Thank you. We have some more comments. Welcome. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Tammen from Sudan, Minnesota, home of Minnesota's first iron mine, and I come here both as a veteran and as a Minnesota citizen who uses our state parks a lot. And I guess I have a dog in this fight, because when I left Vietnam 50 years ago, as soon as I got home, the Army gave me a hearing test, and I had a 10% hearing loss, high frequency. So it wasn't a terrible burden to me, but it was a 10% loss, so I qualify under this bill, for a free pass. And as I think back over the years, I've probably spent more time in our state parks than I did in Vietnam. And I truly appreciate our state parks. And as I think over the consequences of this bill, I know that the dollar amounts are not large, but I personally object to taking money away from our natural resources, our state parks, to subsidize me as a veteran. The military compensates me, perhaps not adequately, but they do. And I think we should not be sacrificing Minnesota's natural resources to subsidize federal military belligerents. And I say that as a veteran of Vietnam and a member of Veterans for Peace. So thank you for your consideration of my words.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate you coming before the committee. And I also understand the roles that the Department of Natural Resources has, that they're trying to do whatever they can to support our men and women who have served. And I know that there's a lot of different organizations that are out there that are trying to help our veterans, because as you mentioned, that the federal government doesn't always come through in supporting our veterans after they've served. So this is one way that the state can step in and help out. But thank you. Thank you. Please introduce yourself.
Tom Diamond. Chair, I would like to speak in behalf of this bill and 1734, the next bill up. One is, having testified at Coon Rapids, I appreciate the follow-through. It's always nice when you testify and bring up an issue and you actually see that it gets followed up, so I commend the author and the committee for having the meeting in the first place. I would also like to follow up on the testimony of the previous veteran. I'm also a veteran. I'm also have my disability rating, and I also get compensated from the government, and I appreciate that, and it's great. And I also very much appreciate the idea that we should not shortchange our natural resources. But having testified at this at the Senate on the companion to 1734, one of the things that I argued, and I think is correct, is that this will actually save the DNR money. This is not a lot. If you think about it, this is just one of those things that seems to be, at least to me, a no-brainer. It makes sense for the state. It makes sense for the veterans. If you're a veteran and you have to get a day pass, you're getting it for free, but you either got to carry your documentation with you, or we have our ID cards with our service connection on them. But not everybody does, and it's a hassle each time. Not a big deal. But you got to bring that. You don't certainly want to be leaving your records in your vehicle, so you've got it whenever you're at a park. So it helps the veteran out in that way, that it's much more efficient. From the DNR's state, I would argue, is that it saves the money, because instead of having people at the parks, every time you go in there, issuing you a new permit, you go in once, you get a permit for the year. It only seems that it's better for everybody, this legislation. So with that, I would thank the authors and would encourage your support, because this is, I think, good for the veterans and good for the DNR in the state. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Diamond. I just checked my own card from the VA, and all it has on there is service-connected, so it doesn't indicate the degree of disability. And previously, before this legislation that I think is really good, it indicated you had to be totally disabled, 100% disabled. This makes it very hard for the DNR to verify whether you're totally disabled or partially disabled or whatever. So I think this is the right way to go.
Thank you, and I agree wholeheartedly. It simplifies it and makes it easy for the veterans, makes it easy for the DNR. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other testifiers from the public? Okay, Representative Ungham, do you want closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It's just a pleasure to bring a bill like this forward. I think it's needed. I think it will help. And I hope it passes.
Okay. Well, thank you. And with that, I again move to refer House File 2961 to Mining and Outdoor Recreation. Looks like they're getting some bills in that committee. So all in favor?
Aye.
oppose.
Thank you very much.
Next is House File 1734, Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, would you like to bring your bill before the House, please?
Move 1734.
Okay.
I take it from the strenuous debate on the previous bill that I may have an easier time of it. With the oral amendment on the previous bill, these two are nearly identical. 1734 is intended to do the same, accomplish the same ends for veterans as was the previous 2027. Well, I forget the previous number. I apologize, but what the previous bill and this bill. If I recall, was introduced 1734 last session, and we're just now at the point of moving it forward, and I appreciate that. I think veterans will appreciate it, and I would just offer to my friend Bob, as a fellow veteran, that I pledge we'll find enough money to keep the parks in good shape, even with all the veterans invading. So I'd appreciate support for the bill.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee or questions from the public? If not, I again like to recommend the House File 1734 to Mining and Outdoor Recreation. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next bill is House File 3101, Representative Luke. Welcome, and would you like to present your bill before the committee?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. This is basically a technical cleanup bill. As you remember, last session we made some adjustments and eliminated a statute that was obsolete. Unfortunately, there was one more spot where we talked about this. If you look on the right toward the end of the bill, there we simply needed to eliminate some language that now has really nothing to attach itself to. And I say this was supported by the agency. In fact, we received this language actually with the help of the agency and the governor's office. So I would ask that it be considered and we move it forward to clean up our state statutes, put them in ship shape, as we say in the Navy.
Okay. Well, thank you. Are there any, in the Army we say boots on the ground, I guess.
Yes, sir.
Put it that way. Any other comments from the committee, from the public? Okay, with that, then I recommend 3101 be sent to the General Register. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Next bill is House File 3118. Representative Freiberg, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Freiberg, I'll bring your bill to the floor or to the committee here, and I recommend that it referred to taxes.
Okay.
Please present your bill.
Sure. There is also an amendment, a DE amendment, that should have been handed out. So I don't know if you have it there or what your preference is as far as dealing with that.
An amendment.
I don't see an amendment. I don't see an amendment. What?
Yeah,
okay, the page has the amendment. So why don't you just speak to your bill first?
Sure. Yeah, I apologize. I believe I handed that to the page before the hearing started. So, and I know it's posted on the committee's website as well. This is a bill that was brought to me by a constituent of mine who is a 100% disabled veteran. She moved into my district recently, a few months ago, and discovered in the process that the property tax exclusion for disabled veterans would not apply on her new home until the following year, and conversely, it would continue to apply to her old home until the beginning of the next year, even though the person who moved into it is not a disabled veteran, him or herself. So she contacted our offices, and we put this together. The bill, as it was introduced, dealt only with the. I'm not a property tax expert. I see the tax chair here, so if there's any issues with what I'm saying, he can correct me. I also have Steve Hines from House Research here if there are any technical questions that come up. But the bill, as it was introduced, dealt only with the assessment year. And extended the deadline by which the person could file for it. However, the amendment changes it so that the change actually applies in the tax year, which is what the constituent who contacted me was most concerned about. I was hoping that my constituent would be able to testify here, but I've had some trouble tracking her down, so it's just me and whoever else wants to speak on the bill. I appreciate the committee's consideration of it.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Does everybody have the DE1 amendment? Okay.
No. Oh, yeah.
Any questions on the DE1 amendment? Mr. Hines, would you address this legislation?
Sure, Mr. Chairman. Steve Hines from House Research. The Representative Freiberg gave a accurate description of the bill. It basically achieves the intended result by granting an abatement for taxes payable in the year that the veteran qualifies for the exclusion, or the property qualifies for the exclusion once the veteran acquires it or acquires the property or becomes disabled, and it basically prorates their tax for that year based on the number of months before the veteran took possession and after, and provides an abatement mechanism, and then also provides for state reimbursement for the abatement so that the local jurisdictions are not owed any money, but the state is on the hook to pay for that abatement just in the first year. Then after, in subsequent years, nothing was changed, and we may need to clarify that language a little bit, but from talking to the Department of Revenue, but we will.
And Mr. Hines, is this something that people get caught up in? Is this something that occurs quite often?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that it does happen with some regularity. I haven't heard of it too often, but I believe in talking to the Department of Revenue, it has come up from time to time, and I don't know if Representative Freiberg has heard cases, but or if maybe you have. I have not heard too many, but I mean, each time it's going to be a factor that I guess there are a fair amount of calls where people ask, do they really have to wait this long before I get the benefit? And this would allow it to kick in immediately.
Okay. Representative Freiberg, do you have any other comments on that?
Oh, I was just going to say, thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say, in response to your question, yes, we did speak to the Department of Revenue a bit, and they said that when disabled veterans have an issue, it's because of the problem in the tax year, not so much the assessment year. So that's the amendment was drafted to address that issue instead.
Okay. Yes, Representative?
Well, first off, Mr. Chair, I'm going to be back on the DE amendment if that's the wishes of the author. Maybe get it in the form that the author wants, and then I can proceed with questions.
Okay. With that, then, I move that we bring before the DE1 amendment of House File 3118. All in favor of adopting the amendment?
Aye.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Yes, Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I kind of have a series of questions that might help with clarification for members on this. Mr. Hines, Representative Freiberg, right now, if I understand this, July 1st, and we'll use the current year that we're in right now, so if July 1st of 2016 is when a veteran would have to apply or notify the county of their intent to take advantage of the exclusion, is that correct, for taxes payable in the tax year 2017 on that property?
Mr. Chair, yes. Representative O'Driscoll, that's correct, although we found out subsequent to drafting the original bill that when it's the case of a veteran who's already eligible for the exclusion who buys a new property or after July 1st, they will still grant them that up until very late in the year to go into pay 17. But for the initial, I believe for the initial application, that July 1st would still apply. And yes.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hines, and I don't see it in the DE1 amendment, and it might have been modified, but the date that we were looking for was to let folks apply up to as late as December 15th, 2016, to be able to get that exclusion for the following year, which would also coincide with Minnesota's homestead deadline as well. Am I correct on that?
Mr. Hines?
Mr. Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, that's correct in the original bill as applied, but under this circumstance, if a person purchased the property in September 1 of 2016, they would actually get a break even in 2016 for the remaining the prorated share of the 2016 taxes would be reduced for the veteran, and all of 2017 would be under this mechanism in the DE amendment.
Representative Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Hines, if a disabled veteran is selling a home, that home is already under exclusion for that entire tax year of 2016. Two parts to the question. Do we go back then and recapture, or is that property still under exclusion? And then we have another property that would end up, the property that was being acquired would be a partial abatement for the remainder of that year.
Mr. Hines. I think it's a good selling point, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative O'Driscoll, the DE amendment does not attempt to take away the benefit on that property in the remaining 2016, as you kind of alluded to. It seemed like that would be a difficult to even imagine administratively how you would issue a new property tax statement to go into effect, but I think if that was the desire of the committee, it could happen. The language in the bill does say that if it occurs in the second half of the calendar year, it would be taken away for the next payable year. So it would take it away for pay 2017, whereas I think under current law, it could even go all the way to through 2017 if it occurred in the second half of the year now. So the bill does, the DE amendment on page 3 has some language to try to take it away, but not in the current year, but to make sure it goes away for the next year.
Representative O'Driscoll?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I don't mean to belabor this, but this is an important point. I think our overall goal is to make sure that the veteran who chooses to sell a home for whatever reason doesn't get penalized by acquiring another home and having to be subject to property taxes on it. And I think that's the genesis behind Representative Freiberg's bill, which I think is good because you had it in one property and your needs may have changed and you have to sell that property, but you still want to or need a place to live. And so there could be a financial hardship on that. I'm just thinking that, and I think the chair kind of alluded to it, might be a nice selling point on the current residents for someone to be able to offer that as a remaining benefit for that rest of that payable year in our examples today of 16 versus the 17. I just want a clarification on what we were looking at on the bill versus any speaking for or against. I fully support the idea of having the benefit follow the veteran, but just knowing that this isn't the finance committee, there probably be a fiscal note that will have to be scored up on this one as well.
And I know the tax chair will be taking it up in the tax committee. So any other comments or any questions from the committee and from the audience? Okay. With that, I move and recommend refer the House File 3118 as amended to the Tax Committee on Taxes. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee.
Next up, we have House File 3167. House File 3167, Jared Detmer, would you care to introduce your bill, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would recommend that my House File 3167 be referred to the Education and Innovation Policy Committee.
Proceed with your bill, sir.
Mr. Chair, what we have before us is, as we know that, we all know that in October 4th through the 8th, Minnesota Twin Cities will be the home site for the Medal of Honor Convention. And this is quite an honor to bring a convention like this to the Twin Cities. Along with the convention activities, there's also an educational component of this. The bill that we have before us is to put together an education program that can be administered to the different school districts around the state. It's not a mandate that they have to have this type of education program, but it's on character building. And as we know that the Medal of Honor Convention brings forth many men, veterans who have earn this honor, the highest military honor that you could receive. And character building is very important, and character does matter. So with me today, that was going to talk about this important character building program, has Liz Dapp here. She's the chair of the Medal of Honor Twin Cities, and also Tiffany Kowalski is the chief of staff of this committee. So I'd like to introduce them.
Welcome to the committee, and if you would introduce yourself for the record, please.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hancock. My name is Liz Dapp, and I am the chairwoman of the Medal of Honor Convention Twin Cities, to be coming to the Twin Cities October 4th through the 8th of 2016. And next to me is Tiffany Kowalski, my chief of staff, who is heading up our education initiative. Okay, so during the convention, the whole reason for the education portion of this is because we know that the convention is going to come and go, and we want to make sure that there's lasting impact in the Twin Cities community and throughout the entire state of Minnesota. When I was in Knoxville, Tennessee for the 2014 convention, it was the most inspiring and almost overwhelming experience I've ever had, which caused me to come back to Minnesota and start putting together a bid to bring the convention to the Twin Cities. Last year, actually almost a year ago on Wednesday, will be the anniversary of us winning the bid. And so basically what we want to do is prolong the impact, make the stories and the legacies of the Medal of Honor recipients, be part of our everyday life throughout the community. We want to inspire our future leaders, the kids who are eventually going to become you guys, you know. So that is why we are wanting to put the CDP, the Character Development Program, that is sponsored by the Medal of Honor Foundation into all of our schools. I will let Tiffany Kowalski take over from here.
Which one? Good afternoon. Sam, if you could cue the video for us, that would be great. What we're going to show right now is a video from the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation. It will give you a brief description of what the character development program is and of how it will tie our youth and our community with our veterans and with all of us in the state of Minnesota and our nation of being the next generation of the pillars of our future.
I think the greatest way to give of yourself and what you have to offer is by teaching. They're trying to explain that the worst thing that can happen to a human being is to have to take the life of another human being. You will never, ever forget it.
How do you teach character? What's the best way to teach character education to the young people today? Quite frankly, you can put up a lesson plan and write anything out. That doesn't mean it's going to connect to kids.
Each Medal of Honor recipient is just like a regular person. You take away things that they've been through and their personal experiences, and you apply them in your own life. And it's like, once you can do that, it's just you and that person make a connection.
When I was decorated, there were almost 400 living recipients. Today, there are 78. And we decided that if we didn't do something, all the oral histories of Medal of Honor recipients would be lost, and lost forever. So we started to record them. And then after a short period of time, we realized that these living histories really did have a lot of power. We had an asset that really could be powerful in education.
We were asked as a team of educators to write lessons based on video interviews with living recipients of the Medal of Honor. So we were looking at courage and commitment, sacrifice, integrity, citizenship, and patriotism. And those are fundamental values for I think, everyone in our nation.
We have, in the Medal of Honor Society, individuals who have had unique experiences. And the best way for any young person to learn is through the experiences of others.
I've never seen before or since anything like what happened.
We've grown dramatically in our ability to get to kids. We're in 38 states, and I think that the curriculum is involved in teaching something like 9 million kids. Not enough.
Not many people know what it's like to be under fire and then have somebody yell out medic, except those who are medics. And they don't know what takes place inside you that causes you to get up and go when everybody else is hiding, you know, ducking.
I think that inherent in all of us is this desire to want to make a difference, to be able to help someone. And if we can see somebody who's doing that, we can say, wow, that is possible.
Character education, it's just part of the nature of our profession. You know, we're not just teaching dates and names and, you know, about subject, but we're teaching young people how to be good human citizens of the world.
What did he do that was really extraordinary to y'all? Brandon?
He ran through a severe firing to help the wounded. Also, even though he was hurt, he kept moving to help people.
Alright.
Their stories are very surprising that someone could go to that deep of a level and, you know, risking their own lives for someone else.
These guys really embody a lot of characteristics that we want to pass on to our students. I've dealt with students who have personal struggles that I could barely comprehend and barely get my head wrapped around what they have to deal with. But then you show one of these videos and, you know, plug this into a class, it's phenomenal.
We start with the premise that each and every person possesses the potential to do something extraordinary. We believe that. Why? Look at us. common people who someone else decided did something extraordinary. If that's the premise, that each person has the potential, what about in a non-military circumstance? Isn't it not appropriate for us to recognize those people?
Four months ago, the Medal of Honor Foundation began its search for citizen heroes. That's everyday people who became extraordinary.
The Citizen Honors is an annual recognition of American citizens who've gone above and beyond in their own personal actions in their communities.
If we could figure out a way to educate young people as they're growing up, that each person they meet has the potential to change the world, then we've accomplished something.
Why I am here is because I wear this medal around my neck. It's not mine. It doesn't belong to me. I hold it for all those men and women that, when asked, stood. They've stood for something more than themselves.
Each of the recipients tells a story of someone impacting them. Someone in their life influenced them to do the actions that they did. So I think we can learn character, and we learn it from the people around us, and that includes our teachers.
Education's the single most important thing we can do to affect the future. Not just the future of these kids, but the future of the United States of America. And we think through the Character Development Program and Citizen Honors Program that we will be able to reach into the future and change the lives of these kids.
Thank you for watching that video. Liz and I thought, and Representative Detmer thought, it was important so you could see firsthand from the foundation and the Medal of Honor recipients themselves as the what the program exactly is. This all started when Liz and I went to Boston last September for the 2015 convention. And Liz and I sat down with as many recipients and their loved ones as we could and asked them what was the most important thing about this convention that they liked to go to. There's a lot of pop and circumstance, especially in Boston, and it was all fun and whatnot, but ultimately they said school visits. And watching the school visits was something extraordinary. To watch the students learn the CDP before the recipients came and to meet a real life hero was something extraordinary to watch. So we came back, Liz and I, and we decided that we wanted to use the Character Development Program and the Education Initiative as a platform for this entire convention, because we as the state of Minnesota invest in our youth in this state more than any other, and we're very proud to have education as a forefront in our state. So we did a statewide initiative and reached out to Representative Detmer about implementing the CDP as a recommendation for character building in the state. This isn't something that is mandatory, and the best part is that it's fiscally free. It is funded by the Congressional Medal of Honor Foundation entirely across the United States. And this would not serve as the only character program in the state. This can act as a supplemental, or it can act entirely on itself also. So far, we have two trainings set up in April for teacher trainings, April 11th and 12th. We are happy to say that the April 12th training is completely full, and the April 11th training is almost there. Collectively, over the state of Minnesota, we have over 50 schools that are genuinely interested and are looking to adopt the CDP, with a handful of entire districts. Those districts will then have a Medal of Honor recipient fly in just for their district to teach their teachers only. Then, once we get the trainings over with in April, and hopefully if this amendment can go through, we're going to have another set of trainings in September before the October 4th through the 8th convention to do one last push to see if we can get the rest of the state to attend the trainings. That's September 20th and 21st. Once the convention comes, it's going to be fabulous, and the 15 school or youth visits are going to be phenomenal, and we're going to have media coverage on them and showcase them as much as we can. But once the convention is gone, then what? At least we now have the CDP, and the Medal of Honor won't be forgotten, and we'll have the pillars of the six characteristics of the Medal of Honor here in our state within every youth. So it's very important to us to include this in the amendment as a fiscally free amendment and a way to not have our state forget about it. This is a grassroots program that has grown across our country, and now they're coming back to the states that have adopted this in some form, and they're doing follow-up trainings. So there is always continuing education. So between the follow-up trainings, the monthly, once-a-month live webinars where the classes can interact live with the Medal of Honor recipient. I do it every month. It's very nice. The recipients speak back exactly to the questions, and they'll say, well, Sarah, in Ms. Johnson's class, that's a very great question. And it's a wonderful interactive tool. Along with the trainings, the teachers, each teacher educator will receive one of these CDP. It's a full curriculum that is developed by teachers. They all have about 45-minute lesson plans with all of the necessary tools. In front of you today is a black box with a flash drive key. You now, each of you, have all of the vignettes of this curriculum, and it's for you to keep, and if you have any interest of viewing them, they're absolutely wonderful. I'm trying to think of... And, of course, all of the online resources through the foundation are available to the teachers also. I think I've pretty much summed it up, and if you have any questions, we'd be happy to answer.
Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Driscoll.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for your presentation. You said there were 50 schools that were participating in the program.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Representative. It is 50 schools for the training that they're signed up for the training right now.
Mr. Representative?
At the risk of not knowing where my districts are, I'd like to know if that list can be made available so we can see
yeah.
who's on board and who's not.
I can let you know now if you want.
Because legislators may be able to be influential in raising that issue in their districts if it's not too late. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
You want to read the 50 schools? Is that what you
Mr. Chair, I don't know if she necessarily has to read it, but if there's a way that we can get a copy of that out to the committee members.
We could perhaps get a copy of those to the committee members. That would be great.
Representative, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. Yes. Representative Detmer had just pointed out that there is no limit to the amount of schools or districts that can sign up for this. If we need to set up additional trainings, the foundation has already hired additional trainers just for our state because of the amazing impact it's already taken off.
Representative Pugh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for your excellent presentation. The video was awesome. My question is with regard to the schools and the content of the materials, wondering if there's age-specific curriculum, and, you know, what does that look like?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Pugh. That is a very good question. Right now, this curriculum right here is for the secondary, for middle school and high schools. And after we came back from Boston, I personally have small elementary age children, and so does Ms. Dapp. And we came back and said, why isn't this in elementary schools? They love a hero more than anyone else. And so we went and talked to the foundation about it, and they said, funny you should ask, we've been working on it, and we just haven't had a platform. So during the October 4th through the 8th convention, we will be launching the elementary curriculum during that time.
Fantastic.
Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's fantastic. I'm thrilled about that. I agree with you completely.
Any other questions from the committee? Anyone in the audience would wish to testify on the bill? Representative Detmer?
Well, again, you know, as an educator myself for 34 years, any time that we have somebody that would come into the school dealing with character building and so forth was a big plus. And I think any time we can look at this type of character building program that we have with the Medal of Honor, we have some heroes out there. And I believe there's 78 currently living Medal of Honor winners, awardees in the United States. And we probably expect 50 plus to attend the convention here in Minnesota. But I would like to also recognize Representative Newton, because we were probably the first two representatives that you contacted, ladies, when you came into the MAG meeting. And you actually sat the two of us down and you interviewed us. And did you use that interview out in Boston?
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, yes, we did when we presented to the Board of Directors for the Society. We did use the testimonies that the two of you gave, along with some testimonies from, my mom, who gave a great one. She is a nurse and also a lobbyist. So it went over very well, we'll just say. We had 14 letters of support to bring the convention to the Twin Cities, which is the most that they've ever seen. Many of our veteran organizations we have to thank for that. And then we also had the most comprehensive bid proposal package that they have ever seen. So overall, it was a very good presentation, I think. And they are extremely excited. They're not worried at all about what's going to happen in Minnesota, because everybody has been so great.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew, if there's no other questions, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3167 be referred to the Education Committee policy.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Thank you.
Next before us is House File 2342. Also pertaining to the Medal of Honor winners, Representative Detmer, would you care to move House File 2342?
Just finding my notes here. Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members, I would like to move House File 2342 to the Capitol, be referred to the State Government Finance.
Very good. Proceed with your bill.
Mr. Chair, well, again, we're looking at the Medal of Honor issue here. We're right now, I have Mr. John Kramer, also Mr. Paul Mandel, that are going to be speaking towards this bill. And last year, it was towards the last part of the session, Mr. Kramer came to me, and I got to know him in Stillwater, where he was involved with raising funds for the Stillwater Veterans Memorial. And he heard about the Medal of Honor convention coming to the Twin Cities and thought it something that he would like to take under his arm and go forward with the idea of presenting a Medal of Honor memorial here on the Capitol grounds. So with that, I would like to have Mr. Kramer address.
Mr. Kramer, would you identify yourself for the record? And
Yes, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is John Kramer. Back actually in in 2013 on the 150th anniversary of the issuance of the first Medal of Honor, I presented a proposal to the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. That proposal was for the addition of a Medal of Honor memorial for Minnesota Medal of Honor recipients to be added to the state capitol grounds at an appropriate location. And that was then the genesis for CAP board staff initiating a series of meetings, the involvement of the state advisory architects, and the consequent unanimous approval of the project going forward, ultimately to the state capital architectural and planning board itself. And just this last month now, February 19th, that proposal was taken to the board, and as a consequence, there was unanimous approval of that proposal, and accordingly, the memorial project has gone forward from that point till now in terms of the establishment of a formal organization, a Minnesota nonprofit corporation with 501c3 status. And so that brings us to the present day. And this bill, which was originally introduced in the last legislative session by Representative Dittmer, and on the Senate side by Representative Senator Anderson, is where we have been, and now where we're going forward from today.
Very good. Any questions for Mr. Kramer?
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Mr. Paul Mandel with the CAP board, and he has some comments to make.
Mr. Mandel, welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Paul Mandel. I'm Executive Secretary of the Capital Area Architectural and Planning Board. excuse me, I'm getting over a case of pneumonia, but we had Mr. Kramer, we've had 2 years of discussions, and we have a site chosen that was approved by the Capital Area Planning Board. And for those of you who are familiar with the Court of Honor, down at the Veterans Service Building, there is a pool with a statue in it, a flower petal and a woman's statue. That's called the Promise of Youth. And that pool was repaired back in 1997, and within a few years proceeded to started a leak. So it's been non-functioning since then. The pool itself, the statue, goes back to 1958, and for years we enjoyed it. Unfortunately, now for the past decade and a half, it's been empty. And in working with the client group and with our architectural advisors, the board has approved that pool site for repurposing as a water feature. The entire surround of the pool would be the site eligible. We have started an RFQ process that will develop into a full RFP and a design competition with architects, engineers, and planners, landscape architects, et cetera, submitting their proposals. The statue would remain because that was part of that was partly dedicated as part of the building and the grounds when the Veterans Building was completed. The pool will be repurposed with some sort of a water feature, not necessarily a deep water feature like we had in the past. In talking with the client group and with the author, virtually all the memorials on the Capitol grounds, with the exception of the military family tribute, which was completely privately financed, has generally had seed money from the state appropriation. And while this current bill in its current form does not have any money, it would be our advice, with the author's agreement, that there'd be $150,000 in bond monies appropriated to this purpose. One that helps to generate private donations and foundation and others, and two, it gets it on the way. Like I said, we will have a design competition that will be completed in time for the unveiling of the design for the October convention, which would be a prime opportunity to do some fundraising also. Over time, what we've learned from in the past is that we do not contract with the design team until all the funds have been raised. We also require a 20% maintenance fund so that in ordinary or extraordinary circumstances that need repairs, the state does not have the wherewithal to take care of. So 20% of the construction budget, and given that it's going to be partly a water feature, it could run up as high as $500,000 to $600,000. And so it would be our advice, based on our experience, that we'd ask that $150,000, and I know this isn't the committee to do that, but we would like to recommend that that would be a helpful way to get this started and to help get the private fundraising, because it's going to be a major effort.
Yeah, Mr. Mendel, I would agree with you. I think we can discuss some recommendations. We are in a finance committee, and I think that amendment could come with when it goes to state gov finance. Mm-hmm. Any questions for Mr. Mendel? Anyone else from the audience wish to testify?
I would, Mr. Chair, I would just add, the client group has been very, very agreeable. They wanted something central, and we have the Vietnam, we have a Korean memorial, we have a World War II memorial, and most recently completed the military family tribute. The promise of youth, at first they were like, so you want us to fix your pool? And when we talked to them about the statue and the promise of youth, they immediately connected it to this whole, what you just heard about in the past testimony, connecting it to the youth and making the connection of youth, because that's where we get our future leaders from. So it's a win-win for the state, and the client group is very, very happy with the central location right at the Court of Honor there.
Yes, I would agree. Representative Detmer?
We have another guest here, Commissioner Chalotot.
General, would you introduce yourself for the record, please?
My name is Larry Chalotot. I'm acting as a private citizen at this. I'm not speaking for the administration. I'm speaking for myself. And I have been in the Veterans Service Building now for about, 7 plus 5, 13 years. And ever since the dedication of the World War II Memorial, I have seen families, at least three generations, there, right after the first World War II Memorial was open for 6 months, on weekends, any day, because I lived on the fourth floor at that time. I would see the three-generation families there, and the passing of history becomes extremely important. This is personally important to me because my third-grade classmate and the person I got properly sent off as he went into the service is a Medal of Honor winner. As a Vietnam veteran, I have seen a lot of things, and the ability to honor and reflect on something as symbolic as this, or the sacrifice of so many, is extremely important. Also, with the Capitol grounds, I do give showings to everything from national commanders of the DAV to other people all across the country. I take them to the fifth floor, and I show them the Capitol grounds. And without exception, they have been in extreme awe of what this state has done. And I believe if we can get the reflecting pool, and I have a personal goal of moving the USS Ward gun from an obscure spot on the Capitol grounds to center front. Those of you who are not familiar with the USS Ward gun, it is the first gun that now has been validated because they have found the submarine that it struck to be the first weapon to fire in World War II. We also, because of the history that has been going on, and thanks to our support of troops license plate donations, we've been able to have money available, and we have partnered with the Humanity Society, who has partnered with education, because I was wanting to make sure that when they bring the future leaders of this state, those being educated, that they have a detailed lesson plan of the history behind each and every one of those memorials. And by the way, we've also partnered with the Humanities or the History Center. So all of those things, there's an old phrase we've used in the past. It's called everything connects to everything. And we believe this capstone event will then symbolize something as important, well, the ultimate sacrifice. So subject to your questions.
Well said. Thank you for your testimony.
By the way,
yes.
May I add one more thing? The research that they've done, this is not an easy task. For example, I've lived my entire life in Minnesota except for about 3 days when I was born in Fargo, North Dakota. If I were to have won the Medal of Honor, I would have been listed as North Dakota. Or if they didn't use the place of birth, they would put the place of induction. Yeah. I got inducted in Fargo, North Dakota, as a good old Moorhead boy. So you got Fargo, you got Sioux Falls. You know, so this is going to take a lot of time and effort and research and so forth. But right now we know of 55 Medal of Honor winners from Minnesota. Was it 72? Or 52? For 55, and there's 72 that claim Minnesota or have roots in Minnesota. So it's going to be a significant task involved. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bettmer.
Do you have anything else to say? Mr. Kramer has a couple more things to say.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I had just wanted to add one additional comment, or maybe several, but we'll start out with one. We have one living Medal of Honor recipient out of the 72 that was mentioned. We're expecting to have him here for the convention and for the groundbreaking for the memorial. I just wanted to mention that just this last week I had the honor to go out to Walnut Grove, Minnesota, town of 800 people, and talk to the city council about the prospect of their hometown boy, Leo Thorsness, coming back to town. And needless to say, it was quite an emotional evening at City Council Chambers, first showing a DVD like the one you just saw from the convention. It's remarkable to see how that small community has bought into the prospect of Leo Thorsness coming home. The superintendent of schools out there is coming up to a training session with staff of his, and as part of this effort of establishing a memorial on the Capitol grounds, our committee is totally supportive of what the convention committee has been doing in promoting this effort of the character development curriculum introduction in the state schools and all schools within the state. And I just had wanted to mention one last thing, that the convention committee and the memorial committee are working hand in hand to make this upcoming convention and the ongoing character development curriculum education of students within the state of Minnesota as complete and as complete and as fulfilling as it could possibly be for everyone involved and all the citizens that will come to experience the convention and the memorial as well.
And thank you, Mr. Kramer, for your words and your work. We appreciate that. And Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, again, I'd like to thank Mr. Kramer and Mr. Bandel and Commissioner Shelletol for his personal comments. And again, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 2342 be referred to the state government finance because of the fiscal note that that we'll have to be working on.
Very good. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? With that, this meeting's adjourned.